Okay, everybody's got three packs in front of them, so are we ready to go?
Speech. Speech. Speech.
No.
Speech.
Guys.
Speech. Speech.
Guys.
Speech.
Come on.
Speech.
Don't embarrass me.
Speech. Speech.
Okay, 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 fine. I'll talk a little bit about my cube journey. It's you know, nothing special. It's just, as I like to say, this cube was already complete within the corpus of all magic cards before I even start designing. It's already there. I just have to chisel away the superfluous cards and reveal the beautiful cube underneath.
Yeah, after all that, I was kind of hoping somebody would make a speech.
Speech! Speech! All right, all right. Speech! Speech!
I'll say something.
What were you going to say? You say something, mate?
No, I was just affirming you.
Oh, good. Great. Love to be affirmed. Anyway, welcome to this episode of Lucky Paper Radio. I am your host, Andy, and I'm here... Wait, I don't say I'm your host anymore. Crap. I'm Andy, and I'm here with my co-host, Anthony, Clean Desktop Maddox.
I try really hard, yeah. Both of my physical and computer desktop. I just got, you know, whatever... I mean... So we were talking about desktops, and I usually feel like I have like five things on my desktop, and it is like what I'm actively, you know, here's the screenshot of the draft we're going to do next stream, and then, I don't know, work stuff, here's a CSV I need to import somewhere, but I do try and keep it tidy, you know, once I'm done with something, put it away. I'm more proud of my clean downloads folder, to be honest. I feel like that is a place that a lot of people just sort of give up.
It's designed to be
true.
The no man's land where you give up, right?
I disagree. I feel like I could not function with a full... downloads folder. I almost just said trash folder, but that's...
Do you actually keep things in there for long term, though, or do you just...
No, it's like empty.
Okay.
Like, I download something, and then it
so,
goes
I mean, I
somewhere
just,
else.
I delete all of mine every, like, I don't know, month or something.
Okay, great. That's
I just leave
policy.
It there in case I, you know, need to get something that I forgot about a couple days later or something.
Sure.
But then I just delete it every month. There's still hundreds of things in there, because, I mean, I probably clear my desktop at least every week, maybe twice a week, and I would say normally have, like, 30 to 40 to 50 things on it, just because I do a lot of computing.
Yeah, yeah. So I am lying a little bit, because there is currently a folder on my desktop called Desk Drawer, and I might just...
Ah, see? Mine is called Two Sort.
Shovel things in there.
Mine is called Two Sort. That's why I put things in my desktop that when I clear my desktop, I want to save, but don't want to put
don't
it where they belong
sort them yet.
Yet. Yeah.
Sort it later.
Then I have a sorting time later.
Good strategy.
Where I get to do that stuff.
You put on a special hat?
Mine is called the Dirty Closet. My favorite way to clean my desktop
Who's
is
Who's that?
Using
a surprise guest on this episode of Lucky Paper Radio? Anthony, we're not alone. The other voice on the line is the raconteur of the Cube community. It's May, a.k.a. Magic.
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 Yes, hello, it's me. Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
We're glad to have you. Thanks for coming on. Last time you were on UberCube, I think they referred to you as an actual host. Like, what is your status on the UberCube podcast these days? A regular host? A contributor at large? What is your role over there?
I'm the occasional co-host.
There you go. Occasional co-host of the UberCube podcast. Big shout out to the UberCube podcast. If you like our show, you should go check them out. And a good place to start, I think, is with May's guest episodes, which I think are particularly delightful. You heard it today to talk about the... way which we write cube descriptions, which I gotta say is so difficult. I find it to be so hard.
I actually have a sort of idea when I wanted to get into this topic that will hopefully make it a little less daunting for you and for the people reading the overview.
I think this is actually a really interesting topic. I mean, we brought this up, you suggested this, I think, and it obviously is a relevant topic to discuss for when we're talking about all the things cube, because we read a lot of cube overviews, we write a lot of cubes, and you do want to have a front cover that makes sense for it. But thinking about it more, I think it's actually a really great topic for this podcast, where we really like to use cube and magic as an avenue to talk about design, and designing a piece of communication material. The way that you introduce the cube is really a big design challenge, which comes with a lot of interesting sort of space to think about who you're presenting it for and what you want to communicate. So yeah, I'm really excited to get into this topic and hear your perspective on it.
It's also a well-established precedent that in any design practice, you need to be able to communicate your thesis, right?
Right.
And that's what's so hard, I think, about writing a good cube description. To me, it's almost like writing a biography of yourself, like a little biography paragraph. It's like, well, there's so much. Like, how do I condense everything that I care about in this cube down to like a couple paragraphs or whatever? It's really hard when there's so much nuance and detail, and it's hard to like give words to an idea that's in your head. So
it's like your biography and your artist statement and your CV all wrapped up into one, plus some technical notes sometimes.
Exactly.
It's also hard to make it short and sweet because, you know, it's obviously your cube, your passion project, and you want to just bleh all the information at you, the people reading it.
Absolutely, yeah.
we often like to focus also on community building, which I think this also comes into play there, right? I mean, if you're playing your cube in a space with other people, having a clear explanation of the cube they're playing, I think, can do a lot to make otherwise new drafters feel more comfortable in an environment where a lot of people just feel kind of nervous or like they're out of sorts when they're drafting an environment they don't know. And so I think that is another element to writing a good cube description. So definitely a lot to unpack. Where do you want to start, May?
I guess I'll start with why it's kind of important to have like a good overview or a good description of your cube outside of just the ease and accessibility, but rather it is a way that you can set player expectations for your environment. And being able to do that in a sort of short and concise way for the starting, but then also having something that people can sink their teeth into when they're being like, okay, what am I looking for? What are the archetypes? What am I looking for here? What is the shtick? What is this environment? And giving them all of your information on a silver platter can be daunting, and the way that you edit it and transcribe that makes it less daunting, hopefully.
This is something I think is one of the hardest parts, is just put aside all of the lofty design talk, just... someone wants to play the cube. How do you explain what they're going to be playing in very practical terms? I know you've struggled with this, Anthony, with the regular cube, with this ambiguous medium power thing. And you said, May, like, what is the shtick of the cube? And I think for a lot of people, the cube doesn't really have a discrete shtick. It's like, well, this is the kind of magic I like, right? It's one thing if you're making the Turbo Cube or the Fey Cube, something that does have a very clear focus and you can actually focus on something. But a lot of cubes like the regular cube or My Bun Magic Cube don't really have that. It's like, well, this is the kind of magic I enjoy, and it doesn't fit cleanly into one of the buckets people already have associations with, like a Pauper Cube or a Powered Vintage Cube or something. I think this is one of the hardest things.
No, I agree. That's exactly why I started using a six-point system for my TLDR, where I have what's the type of cube, where it just kind of, is it singleton, is it a set cube, is it like brawl cube, what is the overarching way that you're drafting and playing it, how fast is the environment, what would you consider the identity of the cube, your quick one sentence, this is what the cube is. Fey cube is the flavor subtype matters cube. And then power differential is just saying how bomby are the bombs, how low are the lows, and then how much variation is your players going to expect, and then the amount of colors that people are going to end up in usually at the end of the draft. And I think those are good starting points of telling your players what to expect rather than trying to be like, here is this specific bucket that this fits in. Oh, it's a Pauper Cube. Okay, what kind of Pauper Cube?
Yeah, this is interesting. I mean, so we're really talking about the target audience of somebody that's going to play the cube, and it's great to have an introduction for them to understand what is the experience they're getting into. And like you mentioned, Anthony... like you mentioned, Andy.
Well, you called me by your name. That's a first. People swap our names all the time. I don't think you've ever done it to me. That's pretty wild. Hi, I'm Andy.
This is Andy.
That's going to confuse people. You're going to confuse everybody.
Anyway, so as you know, Andy, I struggle with both of these aspects of cube design a little bit, or of cube presentation a little bit, in that I'm really bad at coming up with what is the hook for this environment. A lot of my cubes are just like, yeah, this is something that I want to play well at my local game store at a weekly event. It's not something that I want to be like, this is a thing you're going out of your way for that has a huge hook and a huge headline, which, I mean, kind of sounds weird that I kind of want it to be not a cube that people go out of their way for, but that is very much the design. So I struggle with that, this naming and hook. I'm also just aware that I'm not a great player, so I don't necessarily feel comfortable writing this kind of overview for players to say, this is how you should be drafting the cube, and this is a successful way to play it. So this sort of player perspective, I definitely struggle with more than these other aspects of introducing a cube to other audiences that I do feel more comfortable with.
Yeah, I have similar struggles, I think, maybe for slightly different reasons. I think you and
because you are a good player.
No, so. I'm not a good player. We've talked about this. You and I think, because we focus so much on thinking about cube design, I think the idea of narrowing the cube down to like a hook is inherently limiting. And I think everything we do in cube design is about broadening and like opening up the possibilities for what can be. And that's the reason why I also really struggle to describe what I think players should be doing, because I, whether they're better than me or not, I want to see what they will do with my cube unbiased by my perspective, right? I don't want to say like, oh yeah, most decks are two colors, maybe splashing a third, because maybe there's a really cool five color deck that comes up that I am unaware of. Or maybe you can draft mono blue. I don't know. I mean, I don't think so, but I always like hesitate to give that kind of feedback. And players often ask for it, like especially around the draft table. They'll be like, all right, well, how many lands am I going to be running? And I'm like, well, I usually run like 15 or 16, but is that right? I have absolutely no idea. Or people will ask, you know, how many colors is my deck going to be? And I'm like, two or three, but also maybe one, also maybe five. I give those kind of wishy-washy answers because I explicitly don't want to bias people. But I think May is right that that comes at the cost of approachability. And it's really hard to strike that balance, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think that reminds me a little bit of sort of the experience that I have with movie trailers, where really the best movie experiences I've had is where I haven't seen the trailer,
I know trailers.
Nothing about
I
it, and
trailers.
I just go in and experience it like the movie was intended.
But also, how many times do you do that?
It's very rare. It's not necessarily the best way for me to have a good movie experience, even if it is the best movie experience I've had. So I think that even though it feels like to you and I a little bit limiting to be prescriptive to people, this is how you should draft this cube, it is still super helpful and valuable and will overall create a better experience for players because it'll actually get them in the door.
Are we being too wishy-washy, May?
I think it's the opposite. I think you're taking it as a very rigid thing rather than seeing it as players are going to see this as a suggestion rather than, nope, this is my hard line, this is the area that I have, the box that I am putting you in, rather than just the brief overview that a lot of people tend to look for when trying to just be like, okay, I'm getting ready to draft your cube. I have no idea what's going on. What can I kind of expect?
So we're talking mostly just about the overview in terms of like the text content that you write on the cover of your cube on CubeCobra or whatever your favorite cube tool is. But there's a related thing to that, which is an introductory speech. I feel like a lot of cube designers will do this when people are sitting at the table. They'll sort of give a couple sentences, the same kind of thing, like here's the setting expectations for players. Do you have that kind of introductory speech when you sit down with a new group of players to your cubes?
Oh, I absolutely do. And a lot of my introductory speech is kind of just working off of points that I've put into my overview because, you know, repeating things multiple times can get a little tiring. But for the most part, having a good elevator pitch, which, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm pretty sure that's one of your other episodes.
I don't know. I don't remember anymore. It's
been
too long.
It's hard to remember too many episodes.
The number of times people tell us like, oh, well, you said this and this thing. And I'm like, did I say that? Maybe. I don't know. I mean, I trust the person saying I said it, but I have no memory of that. I don't know if
I'm
that's
I'm assuming
normal.
Somebody will let us know.
Does it make sense? Should we like go around the table and just like give our pitch as if we were sitting down to draft with our main cubes? Is that reasonable?
Oh God, don't put me on the spot like that.
I think we should. Look, I'll do the Bun Magic Cube. Here's what I say to people if I'm sitting down to draft the Bun Magic Cube.
Sure,
I'll be like, this is a powerful cube. It doesn't have the like vintage power cards that you're expecting, like Black Lotus or Moxen or Time Walk, but excepting those really big power outliers, it has some of the most powerful cards in Magic, your Lightning Bolts, your Snapcaster Mages. It is what I consider to be fair Magic, which means that there are no combos with a capital C, and every deck is going to be something on the spectrum of aggro, mid-range, or control. There's a lot of fixing. I play two cycles of every fetch land and three cycles of every shock land, so you can have a pretty good mana base regardless of what deck you're drafting. That's kind of my whole pitch.
Did that work? Are you sold, May? Will you play this cube?
I mean, I like playing cube.
Well, this is the speech once they're already sitting at the table.
Okay,
this isn't the pitch. This is the
sure the context.
This is you're going
the place
in blind.
Setting.
You didn't look at my cube description ahead of time. You've never looked at this list before. Before you open that first pack, I'm just going to tell you like, yeah, here's what you're going to see. You know, you're going to see Snapcaster Mages and Uros, but you are not going to see Okos and Migs and Boos and Black Lotuses.
Right, and I think that it is a good elevator pitch for what you're trying to convey, what the cube does, and setting the expectation for what people can expect, while also not just being like, here is the hard lane that you're supposed to be in.
Yeah, and there's obviously so much more that I can say, right? I could be like, there's a ton of interaction, it's a very low curving environment. I think it's not rigid, right? There'll be some combination of that whenever I sit down and explain to people, but that's generally what I do, and I think it's fine. I don't think it's great, but I think it communicates the basics, and people are generally not... After the draft, people don't come up to me and say, you lied.
Yeah, exactly.
So I feel like that's a baseline level of success.
I feel like that has happened to me before.
Plus, it's an important distinction to say, you're the curator, you're going to understand more about what cards are things that are in this environment more than somebody who just sat down to play it. And it's very, very tempting to just bleh a bunch of information at them.
Yeah,
and
all these words have a lot of nuance too, right? Like I say, it's a fair cube by my own subjective idea of what fair is. What is fair to me might not at all be fair to the person that is drafting. They might have a more strict definition of fair and be like, what do you mean? It's not fair to have Uro. That is just an unfair card in and of itself. Or they might think, where is Splinter Twin? That's fair. Like you can just remove it. So that's a totally fair thing. Why isn't that in here? So all these things are subjective. All the words are loaded. And I think you never really know exactly how effectively you're communicating.
So I'm actually going to segue off of your lovely elevator pitch. Not just so that way I don't have to do an elevator pitch too, but also so that way we can convey that to, okay, you know what your elevator pitch is. How do you translate that into your overview in a way so that way when you just send the list to somebody before they're getting ready to come to the cube draft or whatever, then they can just pull it up on their phone and have the same elevator pitch basically put onto them.
How do you do that then? I mean, if you're going to let both yourself and Anthony off the hook, you better you better bring the heat with this next topic.
Aha. Thankfully, I actually have an answer for this. The answer is you start with the TLDR, put it on top of your page. Please, for the love of God, put it on top of your page. I'm begging you.
I love when people put the TLDR at the bottom. It's like, you kind of missed the point. Get all the way to the bottom and be like, too long, didn't read. Well, I got to the bottom, so I probably read it.
If we're going to go with a more grad school vibe, we could just call that the abstract or the thesis or the introduction. But if we want to call it a TLDR, that's also fine.
Yeah, I think we should say elevator pitch, though. It's really more corporate speaky, and we're known for our corporate speak on this podcast.
Point is that it's something short, sweet, so that way when somebody is not just bombarded with information, because the thing about people is that there's only so many steps of investment that they have a tolerance for. Making a good overview is understanding how much information you're giving about particular topics in a very, not going to say just visually engaging way, but in a sort of, what's the word I'm trying to think of? It's not like leading, it's like breadcrumbing in a way of being like, oh, here's the little breadcrumbs of this part. Here's the little breadcrumbs of this part. And then you kind of breaking it off here and there with either, say, images or bullet points or whatever to help make it so that way it's not just a wall of text.
Yeah, I think maybe what you're going to get at is I think it's valuable for the cube overview in form to express the kind of cube it is, which I think is already... Yeah. I'm looking at my Bun Magic Cube, Anthony's regular cube, and your fake cube. I have all those up in tabs right now. And, you know, after the TLDR, the first thing in the fake cube is, once upon a time, there was a happy little cube that had cute things from all drafts past. Like, it's immediately telling a story, right? It is exemplifying what the cube is, rather than saying, this is a cube about storytelling. It just is embodying that. My overview is the way I think. It's, like, very hierarchical. There's, like, a lot of different tiers of labels and categories. I've got gameplay goals with, like, subheadings under there, and then emergent design patterns, subheadings under there. And then Anthony's is by far the longest and is basically just text. It is, which I think does mirror like the nuance that you approach your cube design with, right? You're like, I don't want to narrow things down to like a listicle, right? I don't want five things that my cube is about. You just want a big wall of text, which I think is communicated. Like, I think someone glancing at your page would be like, wow, this guy has really thought very hard about his cube design, and it seems detailed and nuanced, which is true.
Fair, I'll accept that. I do definitely try and do that, though, where in, I think, all of these cube descriptions, the first thing is, as concise as I can be, just write the four sentences, two short paragraphs of what is this cube all about, and then I will sort of often just break it up based on these couple different audiences, one of them being, you're coming to play this cube, let me give you some of the key strategies, some of the things to look out for, compare it to other environments to try and give you some kind of context of what to expect. And then beyond that, a lot of these, I will also have a very different section, which I separate and try and clearly delineate, that this is not necessarily the information that somebody playing the cube needs, but if you are interested in the cube design, whether that means that's because you're coming to it trying to give me feedback, or you're trying to build a similar cube, or you just think it sucks and you want to take it apart and, you know, really criticize it, this is sort of the thought process behind the design. And I really think it's valuable to keep those separate, because it's totally different use cases, a totally different group of people that is going to be interested, or at least people that are in a different frame of mind that are going to need different information.
No, I agree. And part of that is understanding the amount of information that you are going to be giving them that will translate immediately into their draft.
So you begin with a story on the fake cube introduction after the TLDR. You introduce the different tribes of the cube, because you have a specific like tribal focus here with fairies and then humans from Eldraine, and then a little bit of Innistrad going on.
Yep.
How did you come to this structure for the beginning of your cube description of the fake cube?
So the reason that I started with this structure for my specific cube is that it's very flavor focused. I have very heavy flavor constraints. I'm trying to fit a particular theming, and I'm trying to not just have, this is my Little Red Riding Hood, or this is my Hansel and Gretel, right? But it sets the tone for what people are going to be expecting in terms of what that flavor is, because I've already said it in the TLDR of it's flavor focused. So immediately following that up with, here is the flavor. It's not the useful information for the draft, rather than the quick little preview of 9 cards that gives people a visual and textual indicator of what's going to be going on, what kind of things are they expecting. It's going to be kind of grim fairy tale type things. It's going to have things from Lorwyn, things from Eldraine. And being able to communicate that in a way that's also kind of fun and lighthearted, you know, gives something a little bit more unique for my specific case, because it's specifically fairy tales, so making a sort of false fairy tale to introduce it really helps it kind of stick out while also being visually interesting. So
I love how you introduce this, like Andy's saying, you're not just saying this is about storytelling, you're just telling a story, you're really showing the experience and demonstrating the experience rather than just describing it. And same with, you're not just saying this is about tribal themes, you know, these are the tribal payoffs, you're just showing mm-hmm. us these are the tribes and you're celebrating, these are the things that I'm excited about and these are things you're going to discover. And as a cube player, I'm definitely reading that and thinking, okay, there's going to be these tribal themes, I'm very much brought into it in this flavor first way, but then mechanically I'm definitely going to be looking for how does that play out in the actual way that the cards work together and the way that the strategies might develop.
Right.
Do you think of the primary audience for your cube description as being the would-be players, or how much do you think about other cube designers in your cube description, May?
I actually do think about that, and that's why I have all the major bullet points for curators or people who are really into cube or limited and near the bottom of it, because they're going to be the people who are going to be, they're going to have more steps to give for this type of overview, and taking that into account of saying somebody who's just sat down, they're not going to want to read all of this. They're just wanting to see, okay, here's my bullet points. Here's what I can expect. I can now sit down and play. Versus somebody who's really interested, trying to digest the environment, can kind of just scroll down and look at, okay, what's the things that you're trying to do? What are your cube goals? What are your miscellaneous notes and things at the bottom that gives more context for people who want to sink their teeth into the environment rather than just, they're just jumping in. So that's why I kind of started with, again, this kind of overview flavor approach. So that way the people at the top are going to be the ones with the least amount of steps from wanting to read it all, because it's like too much effort, too much text, too long, didn't read, good for you. Or sorry to hear that, I guess.
Sorry that happened to her. Congratulations, whichever. I actually think maybe the three of us are pretty unique in that regard. I primarily think of cube designers as the main audience for my cube description, actually, because I know that by virtue of being on a podcast, that way more people are going to read my cube description that are looking into my cube for design inspiration or whatever than are going to play my cube, frankly. Unless I get to bring it to KubeCon or something where I'm putting it in front of tables and tables of strangers. Right. Maybe there's a few dozen people in our local play group that are going to draft this every year, but way more are going to look at it online. So that's definitely my sort of primary audience, which I imagine is not true for most people that are writing their cube descriptions. I imagine they're mostly writing it for their local play group or would-be members of the local play group.
It's interesting being pretty active in the Cube Discord and, you know, just like the Cube community in general. I feel like this is an audience that I would expect people to write more for, but I think you're right that they don't. But it's so valuable when you're trying to give feedback on a Cube, which a lot of people in these circles are looking for, to just to have that context and understand what the player or what the Cube designer's goals are. So really having some portion of this overview dedicated to, here's what I'm trying to do so that you can give me feedback. You know, here's the people that I'm expecting to play it. Here is what are my interests. Where am I coming from as a Magic player is super, super valuable. But I think you're right. A lot of people don't include as much of that context.
Mm-hmm. And my hope is, at least in the context of my own cube, that a lot of that stuff ends up also just informing a would-be player, right?
Yeah.
Knowing that I aim for a cube that is decision-rich, where the games are small and lean and interactive, and there's a wide variety of different supported decks, and the design patterns that emerge from those, I think hopefully also is informative about that, though I'm not really writing for that audience as much. Because honestly, I think the speech, the, like, you know, 30-second, we're getting ready to crack the first pack, what is this cube all about? I think that's actually the context where most new players are going to be introduced to the cube rather than having actually looked at it online ahead of time.
Much like your Magic Cube, mine also isn't really hard when it comes to, this is the specific lane for this, and the lanes that I've slowly crafted have been kind of player-oriented, and I've been like, hey, people are drafting this, people are liking it, I'm going to keep working on it, fleshing out your thing. and part of translating that without just being like, I don't know, figure it out, forehead, rather than it's easier to be like, well, here are some of the mechanics of the cube, and then I spell that all out, and then you can see at, where is it, underneath archetypes, you can see where I point out all the signposts specifically for subtypes, because that's the only overarching restriction of the cube, I guess, restriction, quote-unquote, of what, how do you care about the subtypes for your deck? And that's the only signpost that I really have in there, and the rest is kind of more freeform, and translating that from your traditional, okay, here are my guilds, here are what each of the guilds are supposed to do, which is fine. It's great for a lot of cubes.
Well, I was going to say, yeah, so many cube overviews I've seen do have, you know, the mana symbols. They lay out all 10 guilds and lay out what the archetypes are. We've talked about that on the show before from our perspective. Why don't you do that, May? Why don't you have, like, Azorius is this and Gruul is this in this cube?
And I guess just to add to that, is that more of a distinction about the kinds of cubes that you build, or is it really about the way that you present it?
I think it has to do with both. When it comes to presenting it, and it's an easy way to get people who are kind of inexperienced with drafting to be like, oh, you are drafting this particular color pair. You should be looking for this particular type of things based on your signposts. And it's an easy way for newer players to be able to pick it up, and which matters for like a cube like mine. But the trade-off is immediately that the more that you make those lanes, the less freedom and creativity people have. I'm going to use a very hyper-specific example here. I didn't intend for there to be Selesnya Wolves that started getting drafted and picked and played, and the more that it started getting up in the numbers, the more I was like, huh, that's interesting. So I'm going to start throwing in the cards that will support that, rather than making it the, this is a thing that I intended to exist because I put those cards there. It's more like a reverse project.
I love that that is in some ways more prescriptive than it is descriptive or aspirational, where it's not just about saying, I'm trying to force players that are in a certain color pair to do a certain thing. You've actually just sort of witnessed what players do and both evolved the cube a little bit towards making that a little bit easier, sort of following those goat paths, but then also updated the description to reflect that this is how players are playing it. Which, right. I mean, that is definitely just a sign of a more mature environment, that you've had a lot of experience with it and you've had the opportunity to have that playtest experience, which is definitely not going to be the case for all players, but
exactly.
For people that have done the work that you've done, it makes a lot of sense.
And that's what's hard, because when I think of who we're trying to talk to about how you're going to improve your overviews and how you're going to improve your elevator pitches, they're not going to have that kind of data or the traffic or the followers that our cubes have. They don't have that kind of direct feedback on the scale that we have, because we just have a little bit more traffic.
Well, they might play it a lot more than we play our cubes. I mean, I don't know about you, but our playgroup has so many cubes in it now that I think each of our cubes maybe gets drafted once a month or every month or two, pretty much. You know, we're drafting every week, but we have so many cubes floating around now that I don't get to play my cube as much as I once did. So in terms of like actual play experience, I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that actually have way more like examples of here are the kinds of decks people have drafted, or here are the things players have done in this environment than I do.
Which does translate nicely to what I was going to say, of being able to translate your actual paper play experience of, hey, these are the things that have come up in my pod and the things that we've been playing around with. These are kind of the suggestions here, and then laying it out that way could be a good way to give a good overview of the kind of things that people are going to be expecting there. Versus for the bun and the fake cube, it's better for us to be like, well, here are some overarching mechanics that you can expect. Here are, like, how complicated is the cube going to be at first glance, basically.
When you think of the players that are the audience for your cube description and your cube in general, what kind of investment are you preparing for, right? Like, I gave an example of my speech. My speech doesn't work if you have never heard of a cube before, really, because you don't know what I'm talking about when I reference a vintage cube or those sorts of things. It doesn't work if you only have played on Arena and don't know what the old cards I'm referencing are. Now we have Snapcaster Mage coming to Arena, but you know the other cards I referenced, they're not on Arena, so maybe you don't even know those cards exist. What is the like level of investment you are expecting or anticipating from a player that you are giving your description to?
I am very, I guess, fortunate in a way that my environment is designed to be beginner-friendly, where I only have, because I only have really have one complex mechanic in it, it's easier for me to be like, this is just kind of fairy tale flavor stuff. If you just draft a color that you like or pick a subtype that you like, you'll be fine. And that is the absolute floor players that I am expecting to play my cube at any given point.
There's only one complex mechanic, you say. I'm trying to figure out what that is. Is it adventures?
Adventures. It's adventures.
Okay. Yeah, adventures doesn't have all the text written on all the
That's
cards.
That's really true.
In terms of what it actually does, which does make it more complicated. Yeah, I don't know. For all that we have observed the limitations of giving much more concrete advice, like here's what the color pairs do or whatever, I do think it's worth noting that that is just way more accessible, right? Like if you are dealing with players that are less enfranchised, right? They maybe have less experience drafting or less experience playing cubes in general, then I think it does make the environment easier for them to have a good time the first time they draft if they just know, like, okay, well, if I pick two colors and, you know, take on-theme cards and draft a curve, I will have, like, a reasonable deck. And giving them that sort of solace going in instead of being like, well, it's really complicated. You wouldn't really understand.
There's a lot of nuance here.
Actually, red-blue can go all kinds of directions. It can be aggressive or controlling or kind of mid-rangey, depending on what you want to do. And that, I mean, that kind of answer is just like, okay, well, I'm bye-bye. I'm never coming back to play cube again because I just feel like this is above my head or whatever. So I don't know. I have to acknowledge that, like, the audience for my cube, which I've known for a while, right? Like, I limit complexity when I can, but I will include a card that is very complex or a mechanic that is very complex if I think the payoff is there, right? I would say that simplicity is definitely not a primary goal of the Bun Magic Cube. The gameplay goals I'm looking for are what my goal is. So I acknowledge that it's just not a great environment for people that are not that invested in Magic or don't know a lot of the full history of Magic cards, right? It's much easier to play that cube if you are familiar with some of the most powerful cards from the game, either from other formats or whatever, so you don't have to read every card for the first time. I guess that is my, like, justification for not giving a more approachable low-level primer on what the cube is meant to be or how to draft it, because I don't think the player that, you know, needs that much guidance is going to have a great time even if I give it to them.
Yeah, I mean, that makes perfect sense. You want to know who it is you're speaking to in order to speak to them in a way that they understand. And also, if there are people that are just not going to have a good time here anyway, it's like, it's not worth the effort to stretch for them. Like, give them a good experience in a different way if you can.
Don't play around cards you can't beat.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I also observed this sort of accessibility issue. We played a couple weeks or months, who knows what time is, a friend of the show's Dimir Cube, which is really challenging to sort of read signals and understand what's going on because you don't have the aid of the color pairs to sort of guide you. And they actually had, as sort of an extension of their cube overview, a little card printed out that listed a bunch of the different themes and archetypes. And after the draft, players were just like, yeah, this was super helpful and really helped me sort of figure out and get my feet under me during the draft. So thanks for, like, doing that extra legwork, which is cool to see.
That's another, actually, extension of this idea. So we played the Cascade Cube, designed by, again, Zach Barish, whose name I will pronounce correctly this time. Back-to-back mentions on the show, Zach. He designed a Cascade Cube where everyone starts the game with a Maelstrom Nexus in play, which is already, you're already talking about, like, one of the more complicated things you could possibly do in cube design, right? We're modifying the rules, we're putting a fairly complicated mechanic just in play on turn zero, but something that Zach did, which I think is fantastic, is make a little card that just tells you how mechanics interact with Cascade that you might not know the answers to, right? Like, how does Adventure interact with Cascade? How does Delve interact with Cascade? How does all these other sort of kicker or whatever these alternative casting costs or additional costs, how do they all interact with the Cascade mechanic?
That little card is so helpful, and I still don't get it.
Well, it's a very complicated thing to try and, I think, explain in a tidy way, and to not have to have, you know, a wall of rules text basically to make sense of that. But I think that's really helpful in that specific context, and I have wondered in the past, like, we've talked about making an emblem for the Turbo Cube that actually just is an emblem that every player gets, so you can just leave on the table so to remind you of what is actually going on.
Right, and same thing. You can put in the back of that the sort of rules clarifications for the couple weird situations that come up. And we talked about
that
before.
Put in big, bold letters, you have to pay for Drakehaven.
we fixed that issue a different way.
Did you cut Drakehaven?
Oh, yeah. Oh,
okay, well, you know.
Yeah, we talked about it on the podcast. Don't you remember?
Yeah, sure, totally.
Yeah, so I think that that's a great way to sort of extend this cube overview and just, like, even if people aren't going to go look at the website where your cube list is, just put it in front of them.
Yeah, know the floor of your players. Is the floor of your players brand new players who are going to have no idea what's going on, or are you having a higher bar and you're going to have some complexity in it? And being able to translate that is a very good way of setting player expectation. Of being like, hey, this is kind of more a little bit more for enfranchised limited players rather than just the newer players, because like you said, there's no reason to put a bunch of effort into trying to, I'm not trying to infantilize people, but babyfying.
To give milk to all the little babies.
I'll give milk to all the little casuals. But,
Wow. Burned. That hit me a little bit.
Anyways, the point is that there's no reason to put that much effort into it when that's not your floor. Understand your audience, and it'll help you display what your goals are, what you're trying to communicate, and what the expectations you're trying to give to your players.
And in contrast to this, you know, I mentioned that my Bun Magic Cube, I think, is a kind of hard environment to play if you are pretty new to the game and doesn't really make a lot of affordances to make it easier for somebody that is relatively new. On the other side of the spectrum, I have these mono-colored beginner decks that I have explicitly designed for people that have never played Magic before or have only ever, like, you know, played once or twice and are trying to, like, learn the game or improve their basic skills of the game. And for that audience, I have been working on writing a little introduction to those pre-constructed decks, and there I talk about things very differently, right? Like, there I am just saying, like, hey, baseline, play a land every turn. Like, you should do that. And baseline, use all your mana when you can. And, like, I'm actually trying to, like, space it out into, like, different levels of thinking, right? Like, the first level being, like, here are the mechanics, and here's what you want to try and do. You want to just play your spells, and here's how your deck will win, right? You're playing the blue deck, it's going to win by getting a Murray Mystic in play, and then casting all of his other spells that bounce your opponent's things and counter spells and make a bunch of birds along the way, and you're slowly going to kill them in the air with a bunch of birds. Just telling them that's how you're going to win the game, right? And that's almost certainly how you're going to do it. It could happen in other ways theoretically, but again, giving up on all of that nuance and just saying, like, that's how you're going to do it. That's your win condition. And then the next level of, like, here's how to think about what your opponent is doing, and, like, trying to, like, chunk it out in those different ways, which is something I would never do for my Bun Magic Cube, but I think makes a lot of sense in that environment where the audience is literally people that I'm teaching magic, basically. And I do eventually want to make little cards that describe that and also describe the flavor of the decks. I want it to be like,
you're a wizard. You're going to make a bunch of birds.
Right. Well, I think, I don't want to get too deep into my theory about how to teach people to play magic, but I think it's helpful for someone to get to make a decision before they even understand any of the rules. And when I teach people to play, I let them choose which deck to play. And so I want them to have an explanation of the vibe of the deck that doesn't require any knowledge of magic rules, right? Like, your deck is going to be the aggressor. It's going to be trying to win the game first. Just trying to describe what the deck is about in a way that kind of gets the vibe across, which will help them make that choice. But that's neither here nor there. That's really detailed in terms of that specific environment. But that's why context is so important, right? All stuff I would never do for the Bun Magic Cube, but I think is kind of necessary there, especially if I'm not there to actually give the explanations myself.
And I like the idea of having those in cards actually physically with the decks, because you're going to hand these decks to somebody, they're going to look at it, they're not going to go look at the description on Cube Cobra, which at least currently is, it is very much focused on the designer and your approach. It's like, this is something that would be useful if somebody was trying to build something similar or wanted to come,
and that's who it's written for.
Ask questions about the details of your decision making, and that makes sense. You're putting that information in a place where those people are going to find it, and you're going to put the information that the players who are holding the decks and touching magic cards for the first time are going to find that information.
Exactly.
I would dare to say, if you really wanted to go above and beyond, you could have two different sections, one on your Cube Cobra page that is specifically tailored for other curators and the online drafters and etc. to convey all that information in a very detailed and nuanced way, versus having, say, like a little fold-up piece of paper that has all that really broken down and, I'm not going to say spoon-fed, but easily digestible way to
pre-digested and spit into their mouths like little baby birds.
But yeah, the point is that having that available physically on hand to just be like, here is kind of my elevator pitch. If you want to know more, I have this piece of paper, and then you can hand them your little brief summary. Like, I always keep the, you know, those little beginner foldable pamphlets that, which is the code,
like,
puts
the
in
turn
like their
sequence
toolbox
and stuff, like the turn order.
Yeah, exactly.
And the phases.
For my fake cube, I intend my environment to be very noob friendly, and part of that is that I always have that in the container with the fake cube, because if there is somebody who's like, I want to try drafting, but I don't know how to play, and then I could be like, I can teach you, and I also have these resources. And then having an additional thing on top of that, rather than just handing them the Magic the Gathering pamphlet, but being like, here is the specific thing that I created to introduce you not only to my environment, but also to this type of format and whatever, because that's the floor that we're talking with. And I could see it being beneficial of having a different physical version versus a different online version. The people that I tend to draft with use online, and it's easy for me to just send them the site and be like, here's the description for the cube. So that way, as soon as they look at it, they're like, okay, there's the TLDR. I kind of get what I'm going for.
I noticed that you have gone to great lengths to include a lot of imagery, a lot of card images specifically in your cube overview. Can you sell Anthony and I on this? Because neither of us have included any card imagery, I don't think, in any of our cube overviews. So
I will say the Turbo Cube does include an image.
What is it?
It's a picture of the whole cube.
Oh, it's not a card image. It's just an actual photo. Gotcha.
So people like us, we do not care about reading walls of text. Like, obviously, I read your articles. I read Wizards of the Coast articles back when they were still on the main site. Rest in peace. But having visual indicators for my environment is a good way that I can set player expectations with the physical cards that are in the cube in a very concise and clean way without just blurting a bunch of information. It's easy to be able to look at my 9 cards just at the first part of the cube overview and be like, okay, I can see that fairies are here, goblins are here, elves are here. I see that adventure is the mechanic. I see that wolves and humans are also here as things that I can go for, right? Being able to communicate that in a similar way that we would say, look at a pack one, pick one, is, I think, kind of crucial for some environments. And it's a good tool for setting those player expectations of, here's just kind of a quick preview.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty sold. I think it also just makes the content a lot more accessible. A wall of text is intimidating. It doesn't look friendly. So having some content to break it up and sort of show you something that's a little bit more playful and actually relevant to the what you're trying to describe just makes it a lot easier to read and get into. I mean, we could also just think of it like this overview that you're writing is kind of an abstraction around what are the actual cards you're looking at, which shortcuts a lot of the themes and things that you aren't necessarily going to be able to understand quickly. But mixing in just some of that literal content of these are the cards you're going to see just actually maybe expresses what the cube is all about a lot cleaner.
Mm.
I want to shout out Possum of the Show, Maramis's great article on Cube Cobra, which is a primer for cube primers. We'll link it in the show notes. And another great resource on this exact topic of how to write a thorough explanation of the environment. They spent a lot of time in that article discussing the different formatting options you have on Cube Cobra and how to bring in visuals to actually break things up, including in providing a template for a like linked list that links to the different anchors on the page. So you can actually have like a little navigation if you're explanation gets really long. So definitely check that article out too. I think it's another great resource.
Yeah, there's a whole technical side to this of like, how do I use Markdown and do all these custom special symbols and stuff, which is not fun content for a podcast, but there is good.
No.
If even you're saying that, you spent a whole podcast talking about regex.
Exactly. You can tell I'm excited about Markdown. I do a lot of work with Markdown. So come directly to me if you need that, if you need help with that.
Or, you know, page on Cube Cover, which gives you all
the explanations. Yeah, start there. Start there. I mean, that's the first thing I'm going to do is send you a link to that.
Markdown's definitely my friend. And I think that it really helps break up and make things more visually distinct for people. It takes a little bit more elbow grease, but I think that it's worth putting that elbow grease into your overview because it helps translate what you're trying to say.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've maybe railed a little bit on my regular cube. It's dissertation thesis of it.
To be clear, I wasn't railing on it. Mm-hmm. I was saying I think it is a good embodiment of your philosophy of the cube.
Right, mm-hmm. And I think that really a lot of the reason for that, why that happened, it's been a while since I've written most of this, is it is a weird cube. Like most people, especially when I first made this, were not designing cubes like this. So I think in a lot of ways, this description is a little bit defensive. It's sort of saying, here's the reason and here's the thought and here's all of the amount of thought that went into why I'm playing with bad cards. Mm-hmm. And I did feel a little bit like that had to be defended. And otherwise people would just say, well, you just put a bunch of bad cards together. So having a big justification felt necessary, which I don't know if that's good or healthy, but I think that is a little bit where I'm coming from. I do want to contrast that a little bit to the description I have for the Turbo Cube, where this is written totally for a different audience. It's a totally different cube with a different expectation about how people are going to engage with it. So it has just a little bit of the technical note about the rules modifications for this cube. But then the rest of it is intentionally made a little bit silly. It's formatted with a little bit of like question and response and not a lot of technical deep dive on the actual design stuff, because frankly, I'm not that interested in deep dive technical design
stuff.
Because
it's too powerful, and I don't want to talk about powerful cards.
The point of this cube is silly. I mean, we could do a lot of deep dives and like, oh, what's the power level of this card versus this card? Is it worth pushing this strategy more? But there's a limit to how much I am interested in doing that, so I'm just not going to structure the overview in a way that invites a lot of that feedback. And instead, what I want to invite is people to be a little bit playful with it, be exploratory, and to sort of get into it and see what happens. So I think framing the cube in a way that gives you the kind of feedback you want is also something that you can do that is pretty powerful.
So I guess the two parts of this for your first wall of text regular cube, I think that having a wall of text that is basically here are the justifications for this card is a great way to convey that kind of information of here are why these cards exist in this environment, in a way that is preemptively answering a question that somebody is definitely going to have. It's like
Thank you for justifying my justifications.
It's like an FAQ, just without the formatting of such.
Sure, yeah.
You didn't ask the Q, but the Q I'm answering because I'm very self-conscious.
Right, like I have in the Turbo exactly. Cube. I don't have FAQs. I just have Qs. No one's asked these questions yet.
But I think that can work. And then the other part of it is it goes back to the breadcrumbing information. We don't need to blit a bunch of information at them, but giving them just enough so that way they'll take a nibble of the bread. They'll be like, "Oh, this is pretty good. This is interesting. I want to do a little bit more exploring with this." And giving them that kind of seed in their mind of here is the kind of things that you can play around with, rather than just the strict. Here is the very in-depth meta-analysis of. It's great for people who want that. But you have to ask if that's what's important for your overview. Much like having a cube, it's based on what your goals are.
So what is our summary then? We've talked a lot about the details of all this. Somebody that's out there, it's listening, it's just like, I want to write a good cube description. How do we summarize this? Let's make an elevator pitch for making elevator pitches.
Ah, yes. I love making plans to make plans.
I mean, to me, the biggest thing more than anything else is just consider who you're actually writing this for and what kind of experience are you trying to give them. Is it because you're trying to introduce new players to the cube that want to understand what the environment is and how to play it and what they're going to see and how they should approach it?
Yeah, are you going to go post a link on your LGS's Facebook page and to try and get people to come
out
to cube night?
Thinking about that context in a very literal way I think is very helpful. Or are you posting this link to the cube Discord and trying to ask people for feedback so you want more of the why you made design decisions or what your context and what your restrictions and limitations are so that people can give you appropriate feedback? Or there maybe are a bunch of other contexts for different types of experiences you're trying to have people have with the list that you're sharing.
Yeah, I think audience is the most important, and I think people do often lose sight of that, where maybe they are a cube designer, the way they think about their cube is as a design object, and even if they're writing a description that is ostensibly for other would-be players, they can't help themselves but talk about their philosophy and ideology of card inclusion and the things that they see in the cube that they want to be there that may or may not matter to a player. So I think that is the most important thing to keep in mind.
And on the other hand, I think that a lot of very literal stuff gets missed and overlooked because it's taken for granted. I'll see cubes that are, you're having a conversation with somebody and then it's like, wait a minute, are you playing this cube multiplayer? Okay, that's really important context that we sort of skipped over because everybody kind of assumed their context was the normal context. So just those literal things about this is intended to be drafted with 8 players or 6 players, or I have this kind of group and I, have this special rule, whatever those things that maybe seem obvious are, just be clear about that and explicit.
I also really like May's suggestion to do a TLDR. Hit those 6 points again for us, May, just so people can hear them one more time.
Sure. The 6 points that I use for defining my cubes are: what's the type of cube? Where you can just put either it's singleton, it's non-singleton, it's a set cube, it's a brawl cube. Just something short, sweet of the overarching mechanically, what are they expecting? Is this jumpstart? Is this a brawl cube? How does this impact what we're seeing in the pack? And just short and sweet, singleton, non-set cube. Then next I have speed of how fast is your environment, which matters for what people are going to be expecting to draft. People will look at those 7-8 mana cards that are normally undraftable in a lot of environments and being like, well, this format's very slow, so those actually might come up in a game. Then it changes the way that people will evaluate those cards and just being like, speed is slow. It's generally a pretty slow format. Identity is just kind of the short one sentence, what is your cube?
That's a real draw the rest of the fucking owl situation.
Yeah.
It's like, well, for the TLDR, you have these simple points, and the third point is, what is your whole cube?
It's more of the, what is the forest, rather than each of the individual trees.
Sure.
This is a flavor cube. That's what matters here. It's a subtype matters cube. That is the overarching theme or whatever, and when something like the Bunt Magic Cube, there it isn't a prescribed thing, then it's just like, my definition of a fair cube. That's an identity. So that way it gives you an idea of, okay, I'm going to be seeing a bit of everything. Power differential is just how bomby are the bombs are going to be, how lows are the lows going to be, the ideal amount of colors. Again, this isn't meant to be a strict, no, exactly 2 to 3 colors or exactly 1 color. It's more of a, this is the general guideline that people are playing, what typically comes up. And it's usually about 2 to 3 color decks for, like, say, my environment. And then the final point is variance of how much variance exists in your environment in whatever your pod size is. So mine
and
has
that's
a pod
from draft
size of 8.
Draft variance, right?
Exactly.
Not like in-game variance.
Exactly. And the draft to draft variance does matter for, say, a pod of 8 of every single card is going to be draft. There is no variance in, say, my environment versus I used to have 15 more cards which added a slight variance to it.
So post-it note style, those 6 points are type, speed, identity, power differential, ideal amount of colors, and variance.
Yep. And I think that it is a good way of avoiding buckets because it gives you a lot of spectrum answers. Because cube is very spectrum in nature.
My TLDR on my Bun Magic Cube is I just opt for 2 sentences, basically, as opposed to a 6-point thing. I think both approaches are totally fine. And I worked really, I really want to emphasize how difficult this challenge is. For about, 9 months, I had a note in my notes app that had my updated cube description that I would keep coming back to every, like, week, and I would, like, tweak it or edit it or add something or remove something. And it was there for 9 months, and I was continually fitting with it before I just copied and pasted it and replaced it in my old cube description on Cube Cobra. So this, like, probably amounts to, 500 words or something, took me a very, very long time to get right, or to get what I believe is right for my own environment. So it's really hard.
Well, I mean, it's representing your art piece, your masterpiece, your cube. It
well, let's not call it a masterpiece now. Let's not put that kind of pressure on
it. No, the masterpiece is the overview. The cube itself, that's just something the Wizards made.
I just added, like 6 cards that might be completely unplayable. Let's not go ahead and call it a masterpiece.
You just took all the cube that the Wizards made and you carved out the stuff that wasn't the David.
Exactly, yes. The cube was inside of all the magic cards all along.
Exactly.
My point is that you're trying to set player expectations and doing so in a concise and meaningful and detailed enough way is challenging, and I'm not going to fault anybody for not feeling confident with their overview, and I don't blame them for reaching out, which is why I reached out to you for this particular discussion to talk about, is people kept reaching out to me for it, where they're like, how did you come to this overview? And instead of just being like, I ended up just started copying and pasting a lot of what I was saying, admittedly, but I'm hoping that this will help convey of more information to people in a way that helps.
I also want to put a vote in. I've been trying to get this started. Mm-hmm. I've started calling my cube an Eternal Cube as opposed to Vintage Legacy or whatever. I feel like Vintage Cube or Legacy Cube or whatever has so much baggage associated with it that I would just like to jettison it and never speak of it ever again unless you're building a cube that meets the expectations people have for that kind of cube. My cube is technically a Vintage Cube. I have Gitaxian Probe in there. I have Expressive Iteration in there, which is now banned in Legacy. So it's not a Legacy Cube. But if I say Vintage Cube, people have expectations that are not met by the environment. Mm-hmm. Legacy Cube is more accurate, but then people are like, wait a minute, here's Gitaxian Probe. No one's ever said that. But it is technically banned in Legacy.
But it just keeps you up at night worried someone's going to point out Gitaxian Probe?
I think it's also, I think people have expectations about what a Legacy Cube is from Magic Online Legacy Cube that are also not equivalent in my environment. So I like calling it an Eternal Cube. Nobody has sullied that name yet. I guess I'm on my way to sullying it, so I'll be sullying that term. But if other people want to help sully it with me, I encourage people that do have what we have formerly called unrestricted cubes in some cases. Like, when I say Eternal, I mean the card pool from which I'm pulling is all of Magic's card pool. I'm not restricted in any way. And I think Eternal also has vague allusions to, like, powerful, because when you say eternal format, you're talking about, you know, legacy or vintage. Those are the most powerful formats in Constructed. So I think there's, like, a lot tied up in that word that I like, and I would encourage other people to use if your cube is in a similar vein.
No, I agree with you 100%. And for a similar reason.
And I don't want to say how long it took me to come up with that word. It took so long.
And I would say that there is a similar reasoning of saying, oh, I have a vintage cube, because it's supposed to be more old school Magic Plus, and trying to convey that by saying, well, it's a vintage cube, and then people will play it expecting, you know, Magic Online's vintage cube, and they're like, hang on, why is there, like, a Shivan Dragon in here? Why is there, like, Sarah Angel? Why is there, like, Savannah Lions?
There's an easy answer to that. It's because those cards are cool.
Absolutely. I get questions like, I've used to introduce my cube as a vintage cube, and I would have questions like, where's Armageddon? And it's like, well, I mean, that's what you expect to be in a vintage cube, and that makes total sense. Or, you know, where's Opposition? And that was in there for a while. But, you know, I get questions like that because that's what people have expectations about when it comes to vintage cube. Or they think they know what a vintage cube mono white deck looks like, and it includes Armageddon at the top end.
Yep.
So just trying to get rid of all that baggage and start a little bit fresh, but still, you know, with a word that makes sense in the context of Magic is what I'm going for there. And trying to spread the word.
I would also extend this by saying you could also define cubes as being time locked. It's specifically cards from this point in time to this point in time, or it is specifically from this point backwards. And that is a good way to convey the kind of card pool that people can expect.
Another resource I think you can look to here, in addition to Miramas's Primer on Cube Primers, is Parker's article on luckypaper.co, the first four questions a cube designer should ask. Mm-hmm. That is not strictly about writing your cube description. It's more about, if you are new to designing a cube, how do you figure out what your goals are and explain them to others, which I think is maybe useful if your audience is other cube designers you're looking for feedback from.
I think if that's your audience, these are exactly the pieces of context that are really helpful to get good feedback.
Yeah.
And it's just a generally useful start for just starting the cube description, because once you have something on quote-unquote paper, then you can refine it and work on it more later. But being able to use, hey, what are the four questions you should be asking for the cube design? Answering those and then putting that in your cube description gives you something to work with.
Getting started is always the hardest part. It's just like we tell people, just start playing if you're trying to get into cube. Just put cards together, draft them. Just, you know, start writing words, see what comes out. I like the dichotomy between the attitude towards writing, which is just get everything out of my head, just blah, 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 dump it out. And the attitude of editing, which is like, now I'm actually going to go back and figure out what order these things belong in, gives this thing some structure, cut all the stuff that actually doesn't matter, even though I did spend the time to blurt it out because I had to blurt it out to know that it didn't matter, right? Mm. I think that's a good attitude to have towards this kind of stuff too, right?
No, I agree.
Write a long letter if you don't have time to write a short one, you know?
But then try and make it short.
You're not carving it out of stone. It's subject to change.
Well, we can't have May on the show and not take the opportunity to do a pack one, pick one from the fake cube, Anthony. So I do have a pack pulled up here. I sent it to both of you. May, do you want to give your cube speech before we do the pack one, pick one?
Sure. So I guess
you
since
can say
I'm...
no if you want. You tried to get out of this, and I'm bringing it back around.
I guess I'm being brought back into this. Generally, it is the flavor-centered, subtype matters cubes. There's a lot of different lanes that you can kind of play around with, but generally it's very low complexity cards, very high centered on flavor, and a lot of the signposts that you're going to be seeing are going to be around those subtypes rather than specific guild archetypes.
All right, shall I read the pack?
Yep, go for it.
All right, we've got Avian Changeling, Sleep, Foreboding Fruit, Mana Leak, Forgotten Cave, Battle Cry Goblin, Surveilling Sprite, Windscarred Crag, Prismatic Lens, Goblin Raze Runners, Rally for the Throne, Wren's Run Packmaster, Imperious Perfect, Terramorphic Expanse, and Reclamation Sage. I'm going to throw to you, Anthony, first. We'll end on May so we don't have our picks influenced by the designer of the environment. What are you taking here?
You want my pure noob choice first? A bunch of things are appealing here. We've got Avian Changeling. Changelings seem really powerful in a tribal environment where you can bridge different payoffs, and flying is a relevant keyword in a lot of environments. Battlecry Goblin seems like one of the most powerful tribal specific payoff cards here. It's also just a really, really good efficient rate. We've got a Prismatic Lens. It's going to ramp you and fix your mana. A Terramorphic Expanse, which is also just an easy first pick because it's going to make it in my deck no matter what. But I think I'm just stuck on one of these two elves, Renzrun Packmaster or Imperius Perfect. If I'm looking at Battlecry Goblin and Imperius Perfect, I think pound for pound, Battlecry Goblin is just more powerful. But what am I here for? I'm here to play the tribe that speaks to me most, and today that's elves. I'm going to take this Perfect.
That's pretty similar to my answer, except wow. I didn't think about it that hard at all. I said,
card's the best card.
No. I'm not taking Imperius Perfect. I am looking at this pack and I'm saying, you know what I like to play? Goblins. I love goblins.
Great.
I play goblins
in goblin EDH deck?
In many formats. It's one of my few EDH decks is a goblin deck that I've had for so many years now. It's the one that didn't get taken apart in the great Andy's No Longer Playing Commander fest of probably 2018 or whatever that was. And yeah, I'm just taking Battlecry Goblin because it is a 2-drop and it says Goblin on it. I do think it's probably one of the stronger cards in the pack, which is, you know, doesn't hurt. But if that card was just, you know, Mog Fanatic or something, I'd probably take that too because I'm just playing Goblins in this queue. I'm going to do it.
It's got Goblin written on it like 5 times, I think.
Yeah, it's the most Goblin card.
It's a very Goblin-y Goblin of all Goblins.
Now, May, what is the correct answer? What should we be doing?
So I don't think that there's a correct answer in this pack. I think that if I were to point to the top three cards that are probably the best picks here, I would say Avian Changeling is probably third. I would say Imperius Perfect is probably second, and Battlecry Goblin's probably first.
Woo!
Wow.
Goblins
wow.
for life!
So there's no correct answer, but here are the three best answers in order.
Bang, 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 bang! Goblins win!
I will preface by saying, in my opinion, here's my reasoning, and it's not based on what I'd actually want to play, but rather what's kind of going on in the pack and what am I going to be passing. If I take this Battlecry Goblin, odds are Raze Runners, Forgotten Cove, and possibly the Windscarred is going to come back around. Possibly.
Yeah, I think the Raze Runners is coming back, I hope.
My reasoning why I would pick Imperius Perfect a little lower is just because if I take that, I'm probably not going to see Reclamation Sage or Renrun's Packmaster come back.
How's it feel to make a mistake, Anthony?
And then Avian Changeling is much weaker than the rest of the two of those, but because changelings are just absurdly strong in this environment because they're changelings, and it's the one of two white cards in the pack, and nobody's going to be second picking the Rally for the Throne unless they're really forcing white. So that is my reasoning behind those three as choices.
The last thing we got to get from you while you're here, May. What do you think of the art direction, the art style of the Lorwyn Changelings?
I think that's a complicated question depending on...
It is a complicated question.
It's a complicated question because they range from either, haha, this is just a funny little shape-shifting guy, to this thing is like a two-headed who knows what.
Like, they're all little, like, mirror-finished men. Little old, creepy mirror-finished men, like E.T.-like creatures. I think they're terrible. Anthony likes them. I think they're one of the worst designed creatures in all of Magic.
They definitely tried a different direction in Modern Horizons, because clearly it was not working for a lot of people. But, I mean, just look at Skeletal Changeling. He's just this cute little guy.
It's a cute little old man made of mirrors.
And bones.
A little Quicksilver dude.
It's just a little dog bone thing with a head.
Yeah, I think the Modern Horizons Changeling art direction is great. A+, would do it again. The Lorwyn ones, just not for me. I mean, I'll give them this. They are evocative, and they are singular. They stand alone. You're not going to confuse them with anything else, but...
Have you seen Changeling Hero? I just have to say some card names so I can put them in the
page. Yes, I've seen them all, Anthony.
It's just this cool little warrior with a cat face and a shark thing.
I'm biased since they're in my environment, but I actually like them to a degree that some of them are great. Moth Dust Changeling is probably my favorite aesthetically.
Avian Changeling, just some creepy old man with an old long neck made of glass. Whatever, it's fine.
I agree. Some of them are just not very pleasant to look like, but some other ones are just kind of, this is just a little guy. How could you dislike him?
I'll focus on my favorite tribe, which is pleasant to look at, which is goblins. We all love the goblin art direction and how it's varied over
wow.
the years.
Wow.
That's what I'm going to stick with. May, thanks so much for coming on the show. This has been great.
Thanks. Thanks so much for having me.
Where do you want to point people? I point people to your Twitter presence, presumably. You can be found on Twitter at twitter.com/Miagic, and that's M-Y-A-G-I-C. It's Magic 1. I got this wrong in that article, too, right?
Yep.
Josh.
That's why I'm correcting it now.
Who has Magic that you had to be Magic 1?
I don't know.
I'm writing Twitter right now.
I know.
Dear Mr. Musk, there's an issue with Twitter you should know about.
A very important one. Somebody
I'm magic everywhere
on...
else except for Twitter. And the person who has magic doesn't even use her account.
Yeah, we're going to get that account liberated. We're going to make it happen. Anyway, for now, your magic one on Twitter. And then do you want to point people to your YouTube channel, too? Where else should people go to find more magic? The UberCube podcast, obviously, UberCube, is where you can also find more May. Where else?
If you really want to find more May, then just magic at YouTube or Twitch. Sometimes I stream.
A variety streamer, right? Not always magic, but whatever you're in for.
Yeah.
Well, great. I think that makes this an episode of Lucky Paper Radio. Thanks for tuning in. All of our music is produced by DJ James Nasty. All the magic cards are produced by Wizards of the Coast. This show is produced by Anthony, May, and I, thinking really hard, not about magic cards, but instead about our own cubes, and trying to write a concise description of them, and then talking about that for a while. So thanks, Anthony and May, for doing that.
Of course.
Who else is ready to totally rewrite all their cube descriptions after thinking about them way too hard?
I still like my Bun Magic one. The other ones I could definitely rewrite for sure. For sure, for sure, for sure, for sure. The Bun Magic one I redid like relatively recently. I can check the blog because I archived the old cube description on the blog, so I would still have access to it if I wanted to.
Wow.
Let's see. I don't like deleting things. That's the thing about me and the internet. Let's see.
You should have just saved it in your to sort folder on your desktop.
Apparently it was 5 months ago that I updated the cube description and archived the old one. So it still feels pretty new because that other one was there since like the beginning of Cube Cobra, basically. So anyway, I'm okay with it for now. Feels okay. I might add some visuals after May's encouragement.
Yeah, I might have to do that as well. I do like doing some visuals. You know, like when I wrote the BattleBox article, I spent way too much time making that nice little card fan.
I think you should continue to spend way too much time making that happen for all of the card groups on the entire site.
It's a lot harder to do it abstractly.
No, you just replace some things with variables. It's great.
Oh, right. I forgot how programming works. You just replace some things with variables. Why didn't I think about that?
Yeah, where it says 5 cards, just put X, and then that's just the number of cards. X. And then, yeah, it's fine. For the degrees, you just do 360 divided by X. And then you got it. It's fine. You can do it.